Narada's questions to Brahma in the first part of this chapter, chapter 5 of the second canto. And the essential question that Narada asked, or the first question that he asked, was who is actually the supreme controller? Because Lord Brahma has been seen to create the entire world, the universe. Narada saw this, knew this. So it was natural for Narada and others to think that the Creator is the Supreme. Actually, in the West, that's the word, the Creator is practically synonymous with God, the Supreme. But yet, Narada saw that Brahma was performing austerities to please another, to get the power to perform the activity of creation. So Narada actually wondered, therefore, why he was doing that. Is there someone still higher than him, higher than Brahma? Brahma means the great, greatest practically. Is there someone greater than the greatest? And that was one of Narada's questions. And then Narada also asked Brahma to describe the creation. So in the last section that we read, ending approximately in text 20, Brahma very clearly said, no. Although it appears that it is me who is creating everything, it is not actually me. No, 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 I am not the Supreme. Rather, Vishnu is the Lord. And all the Vedas, all sacrifices, all austerities, all are meant to awaken one's relationship with Him, to obtain Him. There is nothing outside of Him in creation. And I create what He has already created. Just like Prabhupada gave the example in one of his purports, like Columbus discovering America. In what year? Columbus sailed the ocean blue, if you were an American school kid. You would know. Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. You get to rhyme better that way. But the Columbus, he's given credit for the discovering of America, but he discovered something that was already there. It wasn't lost. So he saw what was already there, and he's given the credit due to his own piety. He's given that fame. So similarly, Brahma creates that which is already created by Krishna. And he explains that. He's just the secondary creator, and Krishna himself, not even Krishna himself, through the expansions of his expansions of his expansions, he is the primary creator. So after clearly delineating Krishna or Vishnu or Lord Narayan, and we know that Krishna, we heard from Brahma himself in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, 14th verse, where Lord Brahma himself says to Krishna, aren't you the original Narayan? He recognizes Krishna as such. Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme controller. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam Anadir Adir Govinda. He is the cause of all causes. Janmadyasya Yataha. Everything emanates from Him. So, after describing who the Supreme is and who the ultimate Creator is, then Lord Brahma begins to describe how that Creator creates. And he will, and this is what the subject, especially of the next two chapters, are. And if it's hard to understand, don't worry about it, because Naturally, the creation, the entirety of creation is very hard to understand. No one can actually even understand it fully. Brahma understands it by the potency of Krishna. But if you don't understand it fully, again, don't worry, because it will be described three more times in the third canto also. So we'll have a chance to go over it. Almost the same thing is described, but with different emphases. Very interesting also to note what the differences of the emphases is in the third canto, the three different descriptions in the third canto. And we see that different points, philosophical points, are being made, even though the same creation is being described, because we are meant to imbibe certain points very deeply into our consciousness. And here, the essential point is going to basically be that Krishna is the cause of all causes, that there is nothing outside of Him in existence. And when we look at this world, there are different ways to look at it according to our consciousness. As we heard in the first chapter of this canto, a person is requested to leave home. The intelligent person will leave home before the end of his life and start seeing this material world not as a materialist sees this material world, because how does a materialist see this world? He sees it as an object for him to take in his hand and grasp and somehow squeeze, somehow or another, put it in a shape, a form, rub it on his skin, on his cheeks or something, somehow get some pleasure from it. And when he sees the material world, continuously calculating, now how can I exploit this for my pleasure? How can I either directly shape it into something for my sense pleasure, or how can I sell it so I can buy something for my sense pleasure or increase my power? But the materialistic mentality is so doomed, because we will die. And those very things that we're attached to will turn into, each one of them will turn into spears and knives piercing our hearts and consciousness at the time of death. Not literally, but they will cause us pain in that way. So, the vision must be changed from that of an exploiter of the material energy to one who sees the material energy as Krishna's energy. Abhinatam namanamano bhumira pondalo vayu kamrubhurevasta ahankaritya me bhina prakritamastidam. They are separated. They are separated energies from Krishna. They're Krishna's external energies, but they are Krishna's energies. So therefore, because they are Krishna's, they are not mine, therefore they should be used in Krishna's service and seen how they can be used in Krishna's service. So that consciousness must shift. We must shift, learn to shift our consciousness in this point. Is really being made that we should understand how powerful Krishna is, how far beyond our comprehension, how powerful He is. And we can never, ever really be successful in enjoying the material world. No matter how hard we try and how determined we are, we can never successfully enjoy the material world. Our attempt is simply doomed. But Krishna is the bhokta. He is the enjoyer. He is the enjoyer. He's powerful. We are insignificant. So to understand something about Krishna's power and that He is the enjoyer and that the entirety of the material creation is coming from Him and going on by His power, we are hearing about the creation. Again and again and again we will hear about it, so that it penetrates our very thick what? we would say, if we were saying in American slang, you'd say, so it penetrates your skull, your thick skull. But actually the thick skull is not the problem. It's the thick false ego, which is much thicker than the thick skull. That's the problem. And that's what we'll hear about too. What the real problem is. This ahankar, false ego, identifying with the body and having turned our back on Krishna, independent, trying to be independent, thinking myself the center, that everything should be rotating around me. This is not good, this is bad, this is good. All with judging good and bad based on what? Ourselves is the center, not Krishna. So this has to be turned around. This is the cause, tedvanva, moha, vinir muktam. This is how to get out of the material world. Stop seeing ourselves in the center. Dvanva mohena bharata. It is the duality, illusory duality of thinking us, judging things good and bad based on ourselves and our selfishness. What's good and bad for me is good and bad for the universe. Based on that we judge, and that is what keeps us in the material world. Samutena dvanva mohena bharata. And all living entities are born into this illusion, and this is what we're going to hear about. The illusion, we're based on the false ego of accepting, thinking good, bad, pushing away the bad, trying to get the good, based on I am the body, especially. False identifications. So first, the prime part of the creation, and this is the remainder of this chapter. What the Lord, how Lord Vishnu, what he does to get the creation started. So we'll read the first 21, 22, 23. We'll give us an idea of what's going on. And then from 24 to approximately 31, if I'm not mistaken, it'll describe maybe a second part of this primary creation, and then the remainder of the chapter will describe the universe, how to see the universe, because we've as the universal form, as part of Krishna's body. Okay, so 21 through 23. The Lord, who is the controller of all energies, thus creates. So we've heard that he is the creator, and this is how he creates. He creates by his own potency. First, eternal time. The fate of all living entities. Fate means their karma. And their particular natures, swabhava, for which they were created. In other words, their conditioned natures. So time, their karma, and their conditioned natures. And he again merges them independently. So they're created, and then they're wound up. Bhutta gramasa evayam, bhutva bhutva praliyate. Ratri. Something agame at the end. That's the fourth line. Ratri pata, some pata, something. Yeah. Prabhajit, something agama. I don't know it. Just admit it. Can't remember it. So in any case, this is all expanded and then it's contracted, wound up within the Lord too. And then it comes out again, this material energy. Now after the incarnation of the first Purusha, this is text 22, Karana Dakshai Vishnu. So here's the primal ingredients, so to speak, of the creation of the entirety of the material universes. So after the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karna Dakshai Vishnu, the Mahatattva, or the principles of material creation, take place. And then time is manifested. And in due course of time, the three qualities, the three modes of material nature appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. They transform into activities. Material activities are caused by the mahatattvas being agitated. At first, there is a transformation of the modes of goodness and passion, and later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, its knowledge, and different activities of material knowledge come into play. So, the basic principle is that the first point of creation is the Lord. This will be described even more clearly in the third canto, that the Lord existed, Lord Karanadakshay Vishnu. Karana means he's the cause of all causes, of the material causes. He existed before anything else. And what existed was just his effulgence and the spiritual world. There was nothing material that existed. And then, in one part of the jyoti, by the desire of Krishna, of the Brahma Jyoti, by the desire of Krishna, like a cloud settles. Now, we can't think in terms of where this cloud came from, because this is just more or less coming by the desire of Krishna. And this is called, sometimes it's called Mahatattva, but for the purpose of our discussion, we'll call it Pradhan. Pradhan means the primal, the first, the primal ingredient. And what is this cloud of the Mahatattva, which is which ultimately the material world comes from? It is all the ingredients are there. So therefore we have heard previously that the material elements and everything ultimately comes from the Brahma Jyoti, because this cloud is resting on the Brahma Jyoti. And then into this amorphous, undifferentiated mass, not a mass compared to a cloud, then the Lord glances at that. And that glance of the Lord's is Shambhu, Lord Shiva. Or we can say it is Sadashiva, who is Advaita Charja. Because it is coming from the Lord, it cannot be material, because the Krishna himself, or Karanadakshay Vishnu himself, has nothing to do with matter directly. So this is an in-between. Lord Shiva is an in-between potency. Like curd, yogurt, is not quite milk, but it's not different from milk. So Lord Shiva is not quite Vishnu, because he has direct contact with the material energy. But he is not Vishnu either. So Lord Shiva's exalted position is it is inconceivable actually. But it is compared to yogurt. So within that glance of Lord Karanadakshay Vishnu, are these ingredients or these points that are described in the 21st verse. There is time. There is the living entities, their conditioned nature, and their karma. And the modes of material nature, which are undifferentiated, are all within the Mahatattva. So when these enter the Mahatattva, the glance enters, then immediately things start happening. So in this sense, Krishna is the cause, through his glance, of the material world. And the ingredients of the material world also come from him. And at every step, his glance and Maya Dakshena Prakriti, at every step under his order, His shakti is required for the creation to continue. So, what happens? So when the living entities are placed in the material world, with time and their natures, within the undifferentiated pradhan, within the undifferentiated three modes of material nature, then the three modes start appearing as separate. And because of the living entities in there, because they're in the realm of matter at this point, the three modes are there, these ingredients are there, and based on the living entity's position, he's a servant of Krishna by nature, jivera surupoi Krishna nitidas, but he's turned his back on Krishna. With that ignorance, false ego is coming. So that is the first thing that's created. So the first thing, practically speaking, in the creation, which is necessary for anything else to happen in the material realm, is false ego. This is the very heart, the ultimate ignorance. Ignorance of our identity in relationship with Krishna. This is at the very heart of material existence. And at the heart of that is basically envy, misuse of our free will. Turning our back on Krishna, not wanting to be a servant of Krishna, not wanting to love Krishna, wishing to be independent of Krishna, wanting to act as if we are the center. That is false ego. So this is what occurs in the first stage, and then this occurs quite regularly, one can say, this creation. Now, in the 23rd verse, we'll go into a second stage, 23. Material activities are caused by the mahat-tattvas being agitated. So when the souls are placed in the material energy by the glance of the Lord, this is also in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvayona Shikantaya Sambhavat Murtaya Sambhavatya Aham Bijapada Pita, that Krishna places them, the living entities, in the womb of the material nature. So material activities are caused by the mahat-tattvas being agitated. So when the living entities are in there with their natures and their karma, then there is an agitation. And there is the mode of goodness, and the first thing, there is the mode of goodness and passion. Because as soon as there is activity, there has to be passion. Because goodness and ignorance, both of them, there is no activity. Goodness because of satisfaction, and ignorance because of ignorance. There is no activity. But as soon as there is activity, that means passion. So then, because passion, the nature of activity is that you do something and try to get a result, so therefore attachment develops, and from attachment, anger develops, or greed develops, which are products of the mode of ignorance. So from passion, naturally ignorance develops. So goodness, and then passion, and then naturally ignorance. So when these develop, then knowledge and different activities of material knowledge come into play. This is dravya, means the material ingredients start coming, and then jnana, which means knowledge, material knowledge starts coming, and kriya, which means activity. So all these start coming one after another. And all these are the different, it's like the prison is being assembled for the soul. This is what's going on. So that the soul, who is bewildered and who has turned his back on Krishna, can have a realm where he can fulfill all his desires to his heart's content, so to speak, and become entangled, 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 doing whatever we want as best we can, trying harder to fulfill our desires. So this is the realm that's being created, the elements of the realm of the prison house. So the living entity will be trapped in fulfilling his desires. So then, text 24. The self-centered materialistic ego, this means ahankara, false ego, thus being transformed into three features. That means when this, so the first thing is created, there's the three modes of material nature, there's the living entity, there's the living entity's nature, and then there's time. Without time, the thing doesn't start moving. So time is like a big stirring rod that makes everything, the karma and everything else, start fructifying, start working. So the materialistic false ego is there. That is what is required, because he has to act. And then that false ego starts interacting with each one of the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, ignorance. And from the interaction of false ego with goodness, passion, ignorance, the rest of the creation proceeds. So the verse is, the self-centered materialistic ego, that means ahankara, false ego, thus being transformed into three features. Three features means goodness, passion, ignorance. Becomes known as the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions. So each one, there's three divisions of these. Namely, the powers that evolve matter, which means matter comes from the mode of ignorance, and this is called dravya shakti. This is all Krishna's energy. This is Krishna's energy that makes this work. And the intelligence that guides such material activities, which is passion, or jnana, or rather, excuse me, jnana shakti here. And, no, knowledge of material creation is jnana shakti, and the intelligence that guides materialist activities is kriya shakti here. Narada, you are quite competent to understand this. So this is, as you would imagine, that when we describe the creation, it's technical. Prabhupada explains in its purport. Now, if we think of it in terms of the living entity is being more or less put into this cage of matter based on his desires and of conditioned nature, which is based also on his false ego. Now he is so trapped, we are so trapped in the material world, and we're surrounded by all these material things which have the shape, which are more or less created according to our desires. In this way, the living entity is a co-creator of the material world. Of course, Krishna is the ultimate creator of the material world, but because it is based on the living entity's desiring, he is also taking his part in the creation of the material world based on his desires. So therefore, he's desiring, and these material forms basically start appearing according to his desires and his karma. So how difficult it is for the living entity. He's conditioned, he has desires, and these forms are appearing right before him. And he has the desire to what? Exploit them for his pleasure, and there they are. So what in the world can he do? What, mostly people just get trapped by this. They try to surround themselves with all these forms that they can desire and more or less dream, anticipate how much happiness they would have if they only possessed these. And that's where the happiness is, in the anticipation of, only if I had this, only if I had that, only if I had, and as soon as you get it, the demigods withdraw their energy, and there it is. You're stuck with this piece of matter that has no potency to give you pleasure.
how to get out.
Prabhupada explains in his purport about halfway through. The cause of such gross ignorance is constant engagement by the materialistic man in the matter of artificially increasing material demands. This is his ignorance, and what is he doing? Always trying to need, get more things, satisfy this desire. To realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to purify the materialistic senses by devotional service. The mode of goodness, or the Brahminical culture recommended in the Vedic literature, is helpful for such spiritual realization. And thus the Jnana-Shakti stage of the conditioned soul is comparatively better than the other two stages, namely Dravya and Kriya-Shakti. The whole material civilization is manifested by a huge accumulation of materials, or in other words, raw materials for industrial purposes, and the industrial enterprises, Kriya-Shakti, they are all due to gross ignorance of spiritual life. Turning, by Himukh, we've turned away from Krishna, just turning toward this material energy, the world of shadow. And we're just trying to grab it, to enjoy it, to squeeze it for pleasure. And that, and we've created a civilization based on that hopeless enterprise. So it's based on the principles of Dravya Shakti, getting ingredients and activities for sense pleasure. So to get out of this, one has to adopt the process of devotional service of the Lord by adaptation of the principles of Karma Yoga mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 9:27 as follows. Yat karosi yarasnasi yat chohosi dadati yat tapasyasi kaunteya tad kurusva manarpanam. O son of Kunti, Krishna tells Arjuna, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me. So we grab, this is karma yoga, according to our nature, according to our desire, the way to get out is to grab that material energy, but instead of squeezing it for pleasure, taking it and offering it to Krishna. That is called karma yoga. Because the tendency to grab the material energy, embrace it, is so strong. But to grab it and then offer it to Krishna is the prime stage, the prime step. So that's how Prabhupada explains very quickly what to do in the material world. So now the combinations are going to be described of how the false ego combines with the different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. From the darkness of false ego, the first of the five elements, namely the sky, is generated. So when false ego combines with the mode of ignorance or the mode of darkness, certain things are created. The first thing is sky. Its subtle form is the quality of sound. Actually, I think sound is created first. Exactly as the seer is in relationship with the seen. So, one by one, read the next verse here. Because the sky is transformed, the air is generated with the quality of touch. And by previous succession, the air is also full of sound, and the basic principles of duration of life, sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. These are all from prana or the different airs. So what's going to happen here is the first thing that's created is a sense object or sound, which is subtle. And then from that, the material element that carries that, which is ether or akash, or kama, come. So first the sense object is created, which is sound. Then after that, the element is created. This is in combination of the false ego in contact with the mode of ignorance. And then finally, the sense will be created, the sense itself. and for sound, the senses, the ear. So one by one, from subtle to gross, when the mode of ignorance combines with the mode of, with the false ego, first sky, and then sound, and then the air is created next, and then touch, just like the air, we cannot see it. But if you move your hand, you can feel it. You can you? Yes. So that is activating the sense of touch. And it also carries the ingredient of the one above it. And then from that there is fire, and fire, different from air, you can see it, although we don't recommend touching it. And then water, you can taste. Fire, we don't taste. And then finally, earth has the ingredient of, or the sense object of smell in it. And Krishna indeed says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the fragrance of the earth, because all fragrances are within the earth. So from when false ego combines with the mode of ignorance, all the five elements are created, the five sense objects, and the five senses are created. Then, in text 30, from the mode of goodness, when false ego combines with the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest, and the 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements, these are called the controllers of the directions, and they are called dikpals. So there's the sun god, the controllers of the air, the fire god, Indradev, the king of heaven, etc. There are 10 demigods that created at the same time. So different things are created by the different combinations. Now we'll read some of the purport here. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation. This is text 30. And Tejas is the initiative of creation. While Tamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of the darkness of ignorance. So all this, always remember that the whole material creation is coming from ignorance. First, ignorance is false ego, and especially our turning the back on Krishna. And then all the material ingredients, they're all born out of ignorance. Manufacture of the, quote, necessities in life in factories and workshops, excessively prominent in the age of Kali or in the age of the machine, is the summit stage of the quality of darkness. Just always trying to manufacture more and more things to exploit. This is ignorance. This is darkness. It can bring no satisfaction to the soul. Such manufacturing enterprises by human society are in the mode of darkness, because factually there is no necessity for the commodities manufactured. Human society primarily requires food for sustenance, subsistence, shelter for sleeping, defense for protection, and commodities for satisfaction of the senses. The senses are the practical signs of life, as will be explained in the next verse. Human civilization is meant for purifying the senses. As we heard, taking the things that we would normally use for a sense gratification and offering them to Krishna. That is called karma yoga. And that is what human life is meant for that type of purification, for removing the tendency to place ourselves in the center, as if we were the enjoyer, as if we are God. That is the purpose of human life. Not for increasing our desires, increasing how much things we can enjoy from the material world. No, that is not the purpose of human life. That is darkness. That is the influence of ignorance. So human civilization is meant for purifying the senses, and objects of sense satisfaction should be supplied as much as absolutely required, but not for aggravating artificial sensory needs. Food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification are all needs in material existence. Otherwise, in his pure, uncontaminated state of original life, the living entity as a soul has no needs like this. The needs are therefore artificial, and the pure state of life, there is no such needs. As such, increasing the artificial needs, as is the standard of material civilization or advancement of economic development of society, is a sort of engagement in darkness without knowledge. Could you put on the tape?
So, what is picked up in this conclusion that we shall become happy with this materialistic way of life? They cannot get to Krishna consciousness, and they do not know also that our ultimate goal of life is Krishna, Vishnu. Then why it is so andhadhandhirupaniyamana sepisa tantra udhanivata? They have become blind. They are blind themselves, and they are also led by blind leaders. The leaders, at present moment, leaders, they say that why you are going to church, why you are going to temple? If you want your bread, just like in Christian religion, they go to church. Oh God, give us our daily bread. But the atheist class, they are propagating, for bread, why you are going to church? You make industry, you make business, and you get bread. But actually, we are just talking that there are so many unemployment. Some people say that the computer, it is called computer, it can do thousands of men's business. So they have discovered this machine. That means thousands of men will be unemployed. That is actually happening in your country due to so many machines. Now, take for example, formerly you have seen the picture, Krishna's Vrindavan picture, Krishna's father transferring Krishna. They are going on bullock carts, no motor car. You have seen the picture. So, formerly transport was bullock carts. The cows and the bulls are employed for agricultural purpose, for drawing the carts. So there was no necessity of motor car. Now you have a motor car, motor tractor. You don't want the bullocks. They have to kill them. How you can utilize them? Then you must have slaughterhouse to kill them. And as soon as you kill them, then you have to eat them. So this is the, I have to say, entanglement. If you kill, then you become responsible for being killed. The subtle laws. Therefore, without knowing our ultimate goal of life is Vishnu, nothing we do is hard to think. That is our interest. The human form of life is offered by nature after so much evolutionary process. Just to understand Vishnu, God, this is the only business. But instead of attending our real business, we are trying to be happy in other ways. Then you can say that if we are engaged in real business, then how the economic question will be solved? We have to work. That's right. You work. But work simple. Why have we invented so much bothering? What is there? If you have got cows and if you have got land, then you till the land, get grains, and there is milk, there is food, there is flour. anywhere you can live peacefully. Whole economic question is solved. And because we have forgotten, we have missed the real point that our life is meant for God realization. We are simply increasing bondage. Puna puna chanti. Adanta govi visitanta. Andhata thandhi upaniyama. The leaders are blind. We are also blind. So they are advising that if you want to solve your economic problem, why you are going to church? Why you are going to temple? Come here. In this business, industry, take loan and start business. That's all. This is going on. But actually, the more we are trying to mislead this one, because they are thinking it is all right, their social condition is becoming more and more grave. That's a fact. We are trying to solve one problem, but many other problems are coming because we do not know what is the ultimate goal of life. Because you are missing the real point. Prabhupada Maharaj said, Nati vidu sarthagatim in Vishnu, durasaya jiva hirathamanina. These rascals, they are thinking that by so-called economic development, by exploiting material resources, we shall be helped. That is not possible. The best example your country has given here, exploiting the material resources, and other countries are also falling, but where is the happiness? In a sort of happiness, there is because we cannot control our senses, we are driving, we are being pushed towards the darkest region of material existence, very hard to leave. Darkest region means that we are going to become animals next life. Because this is animalistic civilization. Nature gave us the opportunity to realize God. But God, realization is meant for human being. The human being, if he does not realize God, he is simply engaged in animalistic way of life, eating, sleeping, mating, then nature will call all right, sir, again become a punar musika bhava, again become a mouse. You know the story? Punar musika bhava. There is a story, this is a very nice story. One, a mouse, he came to a saintly person. Everyone comes to saintly person for some blessing, is it? A real blessing they don't want, some material blessing. Real blessing, Krishna, they don't want. If you give him some blessing that you become very rich man and these are very various blessings. So this mouse also came and begged the saintly person, sir, I am in difficulty, if you give me some blessing. So what is that? Now, the cat chases after me always. I am very unhappy. So what do you want? Now, if you make me a cat, then I can get relief from this. All right, you become cat. So you become cat. So after a few days, again he comes. Sir, again I am in trouble. What is that? The dog is chasing. Don't laugh. You are serious. Dog is chasing. All right, then what do you want? Now, make me a tiger. All right, you become a tiger. So, when he became a tiger, he was staring on the saintly person like this. So, he asked, why you are staring upon me? You want to eat me? Yes. So he again starts saying, punar musika, again you become mouse. Again you become mouse. So that is our position. We are advanced in civilization. Now, we want to kill God. So we are again going to be uncivilized. To remain in the forest and to remain naked, actually they are practicing that, nature's life. So again we are going to be aborigines. And that is being practiced. They are going to the forest, they remain naked. So actually, punar Civilized human being means God conscious, happy life, no trouble, no enviousness, everything happy, no hard labor. Why hard labor? Everything is there. You just employ your little intelligence, you get sufficient food by grains, by fruits, by flowers, milk. There is no difficulty. It will remain in our own way. So that is the difficulty, that we do not know that our ultimate goal of life is God realization. Then God has got all arrangement. You cannot produce fruits and grains in fact. They are given by God. Why? Then you exalt and be Krishna conscious and chant Hare Krishna. But we don't want that. We want slaughter out. Unnecessary. Actually, if you go to the store, there are so many storehouses. How many stores are selling only meat? It is not possible. Then 99% fruits, vegetables, grains you are taking and maybe a little percentage of meat. So why you cannot give up this little percentage? If you think that meat is very valuable, then why don't you leave on meat? Russia is also trying like that. That has become the fashion in Moscow. It was very difficult to find out nice grains. With great Shamsundar used to spend 2 hours daily to secure these things. So, this is the problem. Nathai vidu sarthapati vishnu durasaya bahirathamana. They are trying to be happy by the arrangement of this material activities. Angharathan rirupaniyamana sthiti satata. They do not know that the material nature is so strong that you cannot get out of it unless you are prepared to suffer more and more. If you take to natural life and live peacefully and take to Krishna consciousness, that is your real life. And if you simply increase botheration and problem, then you will have to suffer. That is the position of modern civilization.
Prabhupada continues in the purport. By such engagement, human energy is spoiled. Because human energy is primarily meant for purifying the senses in order to engage them in satisfying the essence, satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, being the supreme possessor of spiritual senses, is the master of the senses, Rishikesh. Rishika means the senses and Isha means the master. The Lord is not the servant of the senses, or in other words, He is not directed by the dictation of the senses. But the conditioned souls or the individual living entities are servants of the senses. They are conducted by the direction or dictations of the senses, and therefore material civilization is a kind of engagement in sense gratification only. The standard of human civilization should be to cure the disease of sense gratification. And one can do this simply by becoming an agent for satisfying the spiritual senses of the Lord. The senses are never to be stopped in their engagements, but one should purify them by engaging them in the pure service of sense gratification of the master of the senses. This is the instruction of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wanted first of all to satisfy his own senses by his decision not to fight with his kinsmen and friends, but Lord Sri Krishna taught him the Bhagavad Gita just to purify Arjuna's decision for sense gratification. Therefore, Arjuna agreed to satisfy the senses of the Lord, and he thus fought the battle of Kurukshetra as the Lord desired. So, the senses The mind is generated and the demigods come from the combination of the mode of goodness with the false ego, and then from the mode of passion, as explained in text 31, the sense organs, the 10 working senses, the speaking, tasting, handling, genitals and evacuation, and the knowledge acquiring senses, the ears, eyes, skin, nose, and mouth. These are created along with intelligence and the life force. So all the senses for the kriya, for the actions in acquiring knowledge, and the intelligence to work them, come from the combination of the mode of passion with the false ego. So Sridhar Swami says that the object, the purpose of all this creation is now described in text 32 in this verse. O Narada, Brahma says, best of the transcendentalists, the forms of the body cannot take place as long as these created parts, namely the elements, the senses, the mind, and the modes of nature are not assembled. So in other words, what's being prepared, all the parts, all the different pieces that are required for a material body are being assembled. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport, it's like the pieces of a car are assembled. And then when the car is assembled, then the driver can go in, enter, and go where he likes. So similarly, the bodies are assembled till this stage of creation for the purpose of the living entity entering. And before the living entity can enter, just like with a car, you can't just drive anywhere. So many other things need to be created so that the car can drive. The roads and the this and the that have to be created. So similarly, after these elements are created and prepared, the required elements for the creation of the material body are assembled, then the universe is created, starting in text 33. Thus, when all these become assembled, so they're all assembled, all the parts are assembled by the energy of the Supreme Lord, so again Krishna's energy is required, then the universe certainly came into being by accepting both the primary and secondary causes of creation. So in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada explains how the next stage where the universes are created, how the Lord, there is Karana Dakshay Vishnu, then I'll just read it. The Lord doesn't change himself. He expands himself by his different energies as well as by his plenary portions. In a corner of the spiritual sky of Brahma Jyoti, a spiritual cloud sometimes appears. And the covered portion is called the Mahatattva. The Lord then, by his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, lies down within the water of the Mahatattva, and the water is called Karanajal, or the causal ocean. While Mahavishnu sleeps within the causal ocean, innumerable universes are generated along with his breathing. These universes are floating, and they are scattered all over the causal ocean. They stay only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu. In each and every universal globe, the same Mahavishnu enters as Garbhadakshay Vishnu and lies there on the serpent-like Seshanag incarnation. From his navel sprouts a lotus stem, and on that lotus Brahma, the Lord of the universe, is born. Brahma creates all the forms of the living beings of different shapes in terms of different desires within the universe. He also creates the sun, moon, and other demigods. So all the parts have now been created, preparing for the actual creation of the universe where Brahma will assemble them. So the universes remain for thousands of eons within the water, the causal ocean, and the Lord of all living beings entered in each of them, causing them to be fully animated. So the Lord, Mahavishnu, although lying in the causal ocean, came out of it and divided himself as of Hiranyagarbha, that is the name of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. He entered into each universe and assumed the Varata Rupa with thousands of legs, arms, mouth, etc. So first this Varata Rupa, which was described in the first chapter of this canto, comes out, and more or less it's in one sense it's described as imaginary, but in another sense it's the universe in a subtle form. It's called imaginary for several reasons, but one of them is that it's a material form. So a material form has nothing to do with Krishna. Krishna only has spiritual form, so it's imagined as a form of Krishna. But on the other side, it's actually an expansion of from Krishna, and it is almost like a blueprint. It is like a blueprint of the material world, because Brahma can't understand, later we'll see this, that Brahma can't understand how to create. But when he sees, when he understands, he's inspired by the Lord, and the blueprint will come, then he knows how to create. It's like the directions, or the everything is existing in its subtle form, in the universal form, and that helps the assembly process of all the parts of the universe. So then, in the remaining part of this chapter, Narada, in answer to Narada's question, questioning to Brahma, Brahma describes what is situated on this universal form. And we won't go over the details, but basically he shows how two different things, the universal form expands within this universe, and two different things, more or less everything is situated on the universal form. There is nothing separated from this universal form, because it's all Krishna's energy. And that's what we were requested to do in the first canto. See all Krishna's energy in relationship to him in the first chapter. So all the planetary systems, this is one way of looking at this universal form, all the planetary systems are situated on the universal form, from the topmost planetary systems to the lowest planetary systems. They're all part of Krishna, none different from Krishna. And also the varnas, the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaisya, and Sudra, they are also different aspects of the universal form. The Brahman is represents his mouth, the Kshatriya is his arms, the Vaisya is his thighs, and the Sudras are born of his legs. So then in the final verse, Brahma explains that there are different ways to make the divisions of the universal form, which planets are in the head and which planets are in the feet. There are different ways, but they're all, whichever way you divide it, is the universal form of the Lord. Okay, thank you. Are there any questions, comments? Yeah.
In the answer to the question, how do you explain
that's not an imagined answer. That was that's really what was spoken of in the first chapter of this canto. That when one is renounced and is a materialist, so he has to stop seeing matter as separate from Krishna. So to develop his spiritual vision, he sees matter in relationship to Krishna. But yet, there's the universal form that Arjuna saw. So that's also an aspect. So this will be described later on in the third canto too. It's not the easiest thing to understand. But my understanding is that the main reason is it's called imaginary. It's not because it doesn't exist. And what you said, it's also true. That people who are renounced and have a materialistic viewpoint need this aid to see Krishna in matter, to see the Lord in matter. So that's also true. But there's other aspects of the universal form that have to fit in too. Well, there's two sides of that question. The first side is that if what we're advised to do is see all matter in relationship to the devotional service of the Lord. That's really what we're advised to do. And the first chapter of this canto describes a progression. How, if one's a materialist, one should see how everything is connected to the Lord. But higher than that is to see how Krishna is everywhere, not only in this way, but also as the super soul. That's the second chapter. So whether you're a yogi, or a jnani, a renunciant, or you're a karmi, one who worships the demigods, the conclusion is one should just worship Krishna with devotion. So it's not required that we see the universal form, but what is required is that we see everything in relationship to Krishna and use everything in his service, and that's called karma yoga. Yeah. But just imagine how much harder it is if we don't even hear and know that we're supposed to do it. Well, we should do it. We should use matter in Krishna's service. But the trouble is the false ego is not yet dissolved. We have the desire to use it in our own service. So how to change, to purify the false ego, that needs purification. Therefore, we engage in the purifying process. If we try to engage matter in Krishna's service without the purifying process, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deities, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, association with devotees, and I missed one, and living in a holy place. So if we don't do that, then we won't be able to succeed. If we don't purify ourselves at the same time as engaging it, we have to become purified and we have to hear, because we have to be with at first we need the strength of the intelligence to convince us. We have to regulate ourselves. Evam bude param budva samstabhyapamana jahi shatra mahabaho kamarupas durasadam. We have to control the lower tendencies by the higher tendency, the higher tendency being the trained up intelligence is needed to be strong to know what is the difference between right and wrong, the correct thing to do, the thing that is for our benefit and the thing that is not for our benefit. So yeah, it's a struggle because we're in the material world. But if we don't hear, then what hope do we have? Yeah. Yes. This is how. No, it seems like that is the potency by which these are created. It's Krishna, because at every stage, Krishna's potency, at every stage of the creation, Krishna's potency is required to make, for that stage to be enacted. He's required. He's not like There was a philosophy in the 1800s called deism, where they conceived of God as like a clockmaker. He just winds up the clock and then everything happens. But it's not like that. At every step, he does that. He creates all, he puts it together, he winds it up, and it starts happening. But at every step, his glance, his desire is necessary. So he does that not himself, but through his energies. So he creates the dravya through the dravya shakti, the knowledge acquiring senses, etc., and the knowledge itself through the jnana shakti. That's what it seems like, and the impellation towards activities, etc., that to put everything together. That's the kriya shakti. So those are born out of the different modes of material nature. That's what it seems.
What is that icha shakti?
That's Krishna, huh? Icha shakti. Well, So this, it's all ultimately coming from Krishna's desire, but it's not exactly Krishna's desire, but it's Krishna's desire in reciprocation with the living entity's desire. So you could really say it's only Krishna's desire that the living entity comes out of the material world, but to facilitate them coming out of the material world, he gives them what they want in the material world. So one could say that's...
He creates the dravya through his desire.
Everything is through... Nothing can happen. That's maya dakshena prakriti. Everything is under his supervision. So without his desire and his pushing the creation forward, it doesn't go forward at all. Those are the kind of points that, from my understanding, it's not possible for me to understand how it all fits together. I can get a general idea maybe, but then someone can ask me a question, well, how does this piece fit in? And my whole concept of the creation, falls apart. But the real things that we're supposed to carry out of this is how Krishna is the cause of all causes, and he's so powerful, and it's happening by his desire. And the living entity is trapped within the material world because of his false ego, which is really ignorance of his, and therefore those things that are created, they're not really meant for our sense pleasure, but rather we have to take them because we have a tendency, an attraction for them. We have to take them and use them in Krishna's service because it's our natural position. He is so great. See how powerful the actual enjoyer is, because to be an enjoyer you have to be a controller. If you can't control, you can't enjoy. And that's the frustration of the people in the material world. Everyone is trying to enjoy, but because we can't control what's going on, everyone is frustrated. So therefore we live in an illusion of enjoyment, anticipating enjoyment. Because what do you need to enjoy? You need power. So look how many powers Krishna has. He has just for a start, he's got this dravya shakti, jnana shakti, and kriya shakti. But what powers we have? Our power is what is our power? Is our money and our influence, and that could be taken just like that, or someone has more than us. So our power, but no one has more power than Krishna in every sense. So you need power to be the controller. You need to be the controller to be the enjoyer. So the living entity has neither real tangible power. No matter how much he has, there's always others who have more than him. So he runs into them. He's trying to enjoy, control something. And then someone comes along and snatches it from him, and he can't do anything because that person's power is greater. But no one's power is greater than Krishna. So he is called Asama Udha. That no one is equal to him and no one is greater than him. So when we hear about the creation, understand Krishna's relationship with the creation, and then our relationship with the creation, how we are encaged by the creation, completely trapped by the motor car of all these ingredients. And on the other hand, Krishna he's completely outside of the creation. And what is he doing while this is going on? He's not working hard, but what is he doing? He's just taking some rest. and the causal ocean. So this is not, it's not even effort for him to do this. Unless we understand his power, how will we have the courage to surrender to him? These are all coming from prana, by the way.
But then prana is created later?
No, that's what. Which one was this that created that? The air. The air is prana.
Oh, I see.
Oh, there was one other thing that isn't clear in the verses about the relationship between the seer and the seen. Did you read that?
Yeah.
So what that means is the relationship between the subtle qualities are contained in the object, like sound is contained in ether, in the same, there's a difference in similarity between the two. They're like subtle characteristics. Like that which is seen, what you see in your eyeball, the relationship between that and the thing that you see, the person that you see. So that there's that similar relationship between the seen, what is seen, and the actual thing that you're seeing power to see that thing. What's seen on the eyeball is different from the actual object that you're seeing. But they're not different either. They're not completely different. One is a characteristic. You're seeing like a characteristic of the object, not the you don't grasp the entire object itself. You're seeing characteristics of the object. So similarly, the sense, which verse is that? 25. Similarly, the subtle form, of sky is the quality of sound, in the same way as the seer is in relationship with the seen. So one is the subtle form of a sense object is what you see. It's not the same as it, but it, so it's the same way that the subtle form of sound, the subtle form of sky or ether, akash, is sound, is situated within it, characteristics of it.
Now,
so that's the meaning of that.
So then in the next, in verse 31,
yeah.
This mode of passion, however, is the craft of the air element as described before.
Yeah, that I couldn't understand that either. How it seems to imply there that
so
once air is created, then passion is created.
You've got mental power, bodily strength, and sense.
But the activity, the passionate activities. It seems to be more that.
But without those things are there. Sense, perception, mental power, and bodily strength. Yes, the mode of passion that's transformed for the.
But the mode.
Produce the organs after the power.
Right. Well, that's a whole.
So the power is coming from the air, right?
Yes. That's yes.
That would mean.
See, there's these are all existing in a subtle form first. In the when they exist in the universal form, in the creation, they exist not in this form. They exist in a subtle form. So it is said that the senses exist in a subtle form in the mind. You find this, the internal senses, this will be described at different places in the Bhagavad Gita. This is the Vedic system of describing. They actually exist in the subtle form in the mind, in the citta. And that is what's carried to the next body. So this is talking about the subtle, not the gross creation of them. Go ahead.
Yeah. Ignorance of our relationship with Krishna, and then the ignorance, the motive ignorance, are they a different ignorance? Ignorance of our relationship with Krishna, then comes the false ego, and all these things.
First, there's a turning our back on Krishna, which is a product of our free will, which is a certain kind of ignorance, but it's not the ignorance of the modes of material nature. It's prior to that. That's an exercise of the free will. So whether that's an actual quality, it doesn't seem like it's an exact quality, but we've called it ignorance. It's not a non-acceptance of our relationship with Krishna.
And from that everything comes.
So everything comes. So the first thing that naturally, because we exist, so if we're not going to exist in our actual identity, we need a false identity, and that's called false ego. So that naturally comes from the soul's turning his back on Krishna. And then when that false ego combines with the three modes of material nature. So you could say that that false ego is a product of ignorance too, but it's... Anyway, this is the best I could do in explaining it.
In the progression, he starts with darkness and ignorance, and then he goes to goodness, and then he goes to passion. Usually he go like goodness, passion, ignorance.
But then it goes to passion and goodness, and then to ignorance again.
When it comes gross matter. Senses.
Something. Right. Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, right.
Again.
Yeah. Yes.
I was going to say, in my experience, I'm like, I just like, I remember things from the past about learning the language and things like that. So, memories that I know that I'm a byproduct of my parents. When the first beings were created, what sort of knowledge at the point of creation did they have, and at what stage of existence were they created?
You'll have to wait for the third canto.
Did they just like sort of appear fully formed? Or?
Yeah, basically.
And did they realize that they just been created?
They understood that at the beginnings of creation, they came direct. This is the subject. This is the subject matter of the called the Visarga, or the secondary creation, that from Brahma. So some of them were sages. They had different mentalities because the whole universe had to be full. This is actually the subject matter of the third canto.
So they created from Brahma's body.
Yes, and his mind and like that. So then, there's not an evolution as from matter to spirit. They're created.
They're not independent from Brahma.
No.
Is not independent from Brahma.
Well, he's the grandfather.
Including plants.
Yeah. And birds and beasts and
microbes.
And what?
Microbes.
Micro who?
Microbes.
Yeah. Micro beasts. I thought you said. I was wondering if you. Microbes. Yeah. Your spelling is like that. The microbes. Well, this is before Brahma. So this is, and then he enters the universe. That was what was described. And then when Garbhodakshaya Vishnu enters the universe, and then from him comes the Lord Brahma from his navel, and then all the pieces are there. And Brahma starts creating what's already been created in its subtle form. Including the universal form.
Manifested.
He manifests it in, right. He assembles it, so to speak.
It sort of sounds like there's lots of noses and ears.
Well, just look around and you'll see for every man and woman you'll find a different nose and ear. Yeah, see, and that, according to. And it's according to the person's desire. So you have to figure, okay, what's your desire? Fill out the checklist. Okay, bring those two big ears from that corner over there. No, not those ears, bring those ears. And he gets, a long nose. elephant trunks sometimes, you know. And then, but in amongst elephants, there's also varieties, right? Isn't it? There's big elephants and small elephants, right? And amongst flies, that means there's also, and caterpillars, and cats and dogs. They're individuals. It's inconceivable. Just a, so if you want to be a manager, there is an opening. If you're very pious and you want to be a manager, there is an opening every 8,400,000 billion years. If you like controlling things. But you have to be the most pious person in the universe to be able to do it. You have to have such a brain. To do it, you need to be empowered by Krishna. Basically, yeah. And if someone doesn't have sufficient piety, even Krishna has to come and do it himself, because an ordinary soul can't do this. I'll have a nervous breakdown. All the complaints coming, the complaint department. That wasn't the nose I ordered, but you desired it. Could you shorten it a little bit, please? But the thing is, yeah, complaining doesn't do any good in this case, because that's what we usually do. See, that's what happens. That's all we do. We wanted to have more beautiful eyes, a little bit shorter nose, straighter teeth, and nice ears, and we're always complaining about it.
Yeah. That means next life you get those.
That's right. Yeah, but the point being that none of this will satisfy us, no matter even if we had the nicest hair and the sweetest of noses and the most shiny of tops of our heads or whatever. Nothing will satisfy us, because it's all an encagement of the soul. See, the thing is that, see, we desire on one level, but our piety and what we deserve is on another level. That's another problem what we have. So then there's the people, the Vedic people, who want to get their piety increased to get their enjoyment to increase, so that they can enjoy on a more subtle level. So what the Veda Vadaratis do, the people who use the Vedas, they don't understand the ultimate purpose of the Vedas, but they learn how to manipulate the Vedas for their enjoyment, material enjoyment. And almost the Kama monks, what they can do, practically speaking, they can enjoy almost forever, because they've learned how to manipulate the piety of the material world in such a way that they could practically get unlimited enjoyment. So they're practically misusing the purpose of it. And of course, they can't outwit Krishna, so they ultimately will lose. But they can enjoy an incredible way. But Vedas Chasavaraham Eva Vidyo, the actual purpose of the Vedas is not to do that, but to get out. And what we try to do is enjoy in an inexpert way, and we suffer quicker, which is a great benefit, because our desire to get out is more urgent and like that, because of the suffering, and ultimately we'll see all our plans crushed regularly. When Hemant starts looking at the clock, I know that it's time to end. Srimad Bhagavatam.